buddy Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom, engineering and producing our show on the other side of the glass. Tom, yes, the excessive heat warning continues, but I don't know if you saw the summary from the airport that was posted this morning about 9:30. We hit 100 degrees, Tom, at 8:15 this morning. And apparently that has only happened once before, that early in the day, back in 1948.
Well, if you had told me that it never got below 100 degrees all night, I would have believed you.
I know. It was a very warm night. But it was something about, you know, down sloping, and that not only is it hot, but today there's a hot wind as well. So we can look forward to relief if relief comes in the form of below 110 on Saturday, which we'll look
forward to. That's what we're hoping for.
And then hoping next week will be a little bit cooler and maybe getting some rain. We're 10 and a half years into our radio project. So it's year 11 in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, 1030 Tucson's Voice. For trusted news talk, worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. Very proud of the fact that we have posted just about every program. There's some exceptions where we've had best of shows, but there's an archive there of 10 and a half years of content at buckmastershow.com. Our live line number is 790-2040. You're welcome to call if you have a question or comment. The live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. You can also reach us. I try to monitor it during the show. You can message me on Facebook. I've got a very active presence on Facebook, and you can always email me as well at bill@buckmastershow.com. It's time for our quarterly Tucson Air Service Report. Dave Hatfield is with us. Dave is the Senior Director of Air Service Development and Marketing for the Tucson Airport Authority, making his debut on the show. I've known Dave for years, but I have not had him on the radio show, so this is his premier visit. Good to see you, Dave.
Oh, thank you, Bill. Thank you very much.
You know, the numbers looking pretty darn good, even during the pandemic, when we would have our quarterly Tucson Air Service Report. Dick Grunzel would tell us, you know, Bill, we're doing better than a lot of airports across the country in weathering this thing, and we're coming out of the pandemic ahead of a lot of airports, aren't we, Dave?
Yeah, exactly. It's been, unfortunately, we're coming out of it now, and it's coming out faster and than anybody anticipated. And the airlines are frankly scrambling. And unfortunately, when the pressure's on to get planes into service, Tucson isn't top of mind. They don't think, they look at our weather and
yeah.
Who wants to go to that?
Right.
And so we actually, our planes are full of people trying to leave Tucson and go to someplace a little cooler right now. But planes are very, very, very full.
Before we talk about some of the new nonstop destinations, let's do a little overview on some of the numbers on how it's looking, that the passengers are returning much faster than anticipating. How are those numbers? Let's begin with January through June passenger numbers. How are they looking right now?
They're looking very, very good. We, in January and February, we were still thinking recovery's a long time away. We were doing about 40% of what we were doing in 2019. And I have to tell you, Bill, as of right now, the last couple of weeks, comparing ourselves to 2019, which, by the way, was our fifth best year on record, we have had days where we are within 98% of where we were. So we nobody would like to talk about a 2% decline, but these days, 98% of where we were in 2019, especially in the summer, I think we're going to exceed past summers if we keep going the direction we're going.
And TSA, of course, keeps track of all these things, and that's one of the very important measures. And so there are some days, Dave Hatfield, that we're pretty much 100% back.
Actually,
are very close.
Well, actually, if you look at the numbers, it took me by surprise because there were days where the numbers were showing the TSA was processing more than 100% of
more than 100%
than what we had seats available, And I went, and there is a little bit of apples to oranges because there are escorts, people taking family members up to their gates. Mm-hmm. Actually, some of the employees that work at the concessions have to go through TSA. So there are a few of those. But I talked to a couple of the airlines, and they said, well, you know what's happened? Now that we allow people to cancel up till an hour before flight time in a few cases, people who really want to go someplace, we tell them you can try standby, mm-hmm. and they will go through the entire process, mm-hmm. all the way out to the gate, mm-hmm. and they'll sit there and cross their fingers and hope they can get on a flight. Mm. So that's one of the reasons why the planes are leaving so full. Every seat is taken if they can.
Boy, standby is something. That's a word we didn't hear, Dave Hatfield, exactly. for 12 months during the pandemic. Now let's talk about the newest nonstop destination. This is an exciting one. It's up in Everett, Washington, at an airfield that has a very rich history, Payne Field.
Yes. Yes. It's in Everett, Washington. People who know the area know Everett. It's on the north side of Seattle. It's actually closer to a lot of the northern suburbs of Seattle than SeaTac, which is at the south mm-hmm. end of the airport. Of the metro area. It's an airport that actually goes back to a WPA project.
Really?
In the 1930s. The federal government had picked out 10 places where they wanted to build super airports mm-hmm. to help stimulate the economy. And so they broke ground in, I think it was 1936, mm-hmm. and started working on it. But by 1939, the Army Air Corps came in and started using it and said, hey, we kind of like this place. Mm-hmm. And World War II was on the horizon. And before they could get it open as a super airport for commercial service, it became Payne Field, that named after some a local military person up in who lived in the area.
I would like to see that. Did they build a terminal in
yes.
the 30s?
No, they never got to the terminal. They paved the runway. And in fact, the interesting part of it is three times they tried to turn the airport back to the local officials to mm-hmm. build a terminal. Mm-hmm. One was after World War II. Mm-hmm. By the time they managed to get ready to do that, the Korean War broke out. So wow. the Air Force moved in. Wow. They never built the terminal then. Then in the 60s, when the Vietnam War was draining the defense budget, they were going to do it again. And Boeing announced, hey, we want to manufacture the 747 mm-hmm. there. And they mm-hmm. bought some land. And so the military, the county there and the FAA agreed, okay, Boeing, you move in. Mm-hmm. So they never built it then. It wasn't until like the 1990s when people said, what about an air terminal?
Right.
And it finally gained some traction about 2005 or so, something like that. It was very controversial up there. You know, the neighborhood didn't want it and this, that, and the other thing. And finally, the FAA said, well, you can't not build an airport, mm-hmm. a terminal, mm-hmm. Because you can't restrict an airport. Mm-hmm. Eventually, this private company called Propeller Airports came in and they said, we'll make a deal with the county. How about we build the terminal and we do a public-private partnership?
Uh-huh.
And they did. Mm-hmm. And it opened in March mm-hmm. 2019. Mm-hmm. And I am told that if anybody, I will tell you, I'm going to Payne Field when we get this flight
yeah.
just to go see the terminal
yeah.
because
yeah.
I'm told it is just a state-of-the-art facility. It looks the ticketing or check-in area is like a really high-class lobby of a nice upscale hotel. Mm-hmm. The gate areas have fireplaces.
Wow!
You sit in
a ski lodge environment at an airport. That is so cool.
Exactly.
I would love to experience that. And just the fact that on the Everett, the northern side of the Seattle metro area, if you're looking for destinations to the east into the Cascades, it's very convenient. Once the border kind of reopens with Canada and to Vancouver and maybe over to Vancouver Island, that's going to be very attractive.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. It's. I think really one of the nice things about this is Port Everett, when they did open up the terminal in March 2019, and then about a year later, it pretty much closed up again because it was still getting started. And as part of this announcement where we got the new flight, Alaska announced that they were reinstating all their service there, all their destinations. And it's interesting that two or three destinations they had tried didn't quite work out for them. And the only destination they're adding is Tucson.
Wow.
So I felt
that LAX didn't work, San Jose, Portland right. not working for them, but Tucson has been added. Is this a daily flight?
Yes, it's going to be a daily flight when it starts November 19th.
Wow, that'd be very nice. But right now in the summer, we've got Alaska, so two on Alaska, and Delta's involved too.
Yes.
And Delta and Sia, and Delta and Alaska have been going head to head big time at SeaTac Airport.
Right, right.
Yeah.
They're very big competitors there. But the fact is we've never had more service to Seattle than we do right now.
That is very good news for someone looking to escape the summer heat. You hit Seattle and then maybe drive over to the Olympic National Park. There's so many great destinations Absolutely. Up into the Cascades. We're talking with Dave Hatfield about our Tucson Air Service. This is our quarterly service here on the Buckmaster Show. But right now, Dave, I want to talk about one of our great sponsors. Do you like bakery goods, Dave, and comfort food?
I know what you're talking about.
You know I'm talking about Mona's Danish Bakery. And,
absolutely.
And Steve and the team up there have just had, they have weathered the pandemic and they've come out looking great. Find out what all the excitement is about. They're open right now for lunch. We were actually went by there this morning and bought some of their beautiful bread that comes out of the oven every morning. Mona'sDanishBakery.com. They're open for breakfast at 6:30 each morning. They are closing in the summer. Steve and the team, they need a day off, so they're taking Mondays off. So a little bit of a reduced hours up there at Mona's, but open right now. Check it out. We'll be right back talking air service, one of my favorite topics, with Dave Hatfield. Be right back.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Why is mining so important? It's the foundation of everything that defines a society. Everything you see is a product of mining. No matter when, no matter how, no matter why, every society on this planet has developed, grown, and modernized based solely on the minerals it could process. That, my friend, is why mining is so important.
Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is starting to review projects submitted by RTA member jurisdictions for consideration for the next RTA plan. The committee will consider plan goals and performance factors as they move into the selection process. The RTA will seek public feedback on the committee's draft plan when it is ready. Learn more about plan goals and sign up to stay informed at rtanext.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson. Tucson International Airport.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at veroamorepizza.com.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Tomorrow, our Friday Focus interview is with Congressman, United States Representative Raul Grijalva will be with me in studio. But right now in studio is Dave Hatfield from the Tucson Airport Authority. And of course, in the portfolio of the Tucson Airport Authority is the Tucson International Airport, along with Ryan Field. Dave is the Senior Director of Air Service Development and Marketing. We were talking a bit at length about this service that will be coming on board up to Payne Field in Everett, which is in the northern area of the Seattle market. Let's talk, Dave, about some of the markets that have now pretty much pre-pandemic destinations that are back. We've pretty much recovered pretty much all of them, haven't we?
Yes, yes. We have, of the markets, nonstop flights we had pre-pandemic, we have all but two of them back, as a matter of fact. And frankly, the two that we don't have back have more to do with issues at their end.
Yes.
One is Bellingham, Washington. It's 30 miles south of the Canadian border. The Canadian border has been closed. About 60% of the passengers at Bellingham are Canadian. And San Jose is still struggling. The tech industry is, and I guess it makes sense, has been slow to start traveling again.
Yeah. But the new destinations, let's talk about Houston Hobby is coming on.
It's actually
here?
Been on.
Okay.
It actually, that was one of the most unusual things I came across during the pandemic, because there's a certain way you try to work with an airline. You bring statistics, but you also have to work within their framework. And I was talking to Southwest, and they were looking for new opportunities that didn't necessarily fit past history. And they were trying to develop Houston Hobby into more of a connecting point for them. They don't call them hubs at Southwest. And we looked at that, and they said, well, how about we give it a try? And we had a nice discussion, and in fact, they qualified for some incentives that the airport gives on new routes. And lo and behold, it's working out very well, and they don't even have that hobby airport set up for full international flights yet. I mean, from the pandemic, it can handle them at any day now. It's just the pandemic. So it's proven successful. They will stay on the route, and it's been very successful. They did an experiment also with Oakland, was the other route we got back. They tried it in March and February and March this year. Unfortunately, one of the things, if anybody's ever thrown a party in Tucson, you know that people are a little slow to RSVP.
Oh, yes.
They're also slow to buy airline tickets. So it was on for about a month, and Southwest was getting a little nervous about it. And they said, well, let's pause it for a while and we'll check it out later. And lo and behold, they pulled it back off. And by the it continued on for another month before they actually stopped it. And by the time it was finished running, it was full.
Wow.
So they said, okay, we get it. But so we're going to bring it back, and they are going to bring it back. If not sooner, it'll be here by the holidays.
So the Southwest Houston Hobby, would that be, could you connect to some of the Southwest flights that they're doing into the Caribbean?
And yes. Things
that's very attractive.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
It is. And to Florida. It's hard. I'm not sure. Well, there are people that go to Florida, but it's hard to get to the southeastern part of the United States without going.
Well, we have a lot of people that take cruises. Cruises are back, and so they're going to be wanting to go to Florida. So this looks like a pretty good alternative. So from a marketing point of view, you're really trying to hit the nonstop angle because people are always saying, when are we going to get this city as a nonstop destination, or why don't we have more nonstop? So you're going to be hearing about that.
That's actually our advertising campaign. It is, and we are taking the word nonstop to mean a lot of things. Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the things that happened is just how much our people work, the team, and we work constantly, nonstop, and for a lot of things. I mean, for instance, the airport takes no local tax dollars. We're a separate entity. We're independent from local government. We couldn't tax if we wanted to. Mm-hmm. So
that's something a lot of people don't understand.
Right.
They do not understand the authority, Tucson Airport Authority, how that's different. You know, it's not, as you say, you're not taking city tax dollars.
So everything we get, we earn. We get from fees. And we know that the last time we did an economic development, economic impact study, it was $6.7 billion that the two airports contribute to the local economy. We'd like to grow that. I mean, there's a lot of people that work for companies that need the airports. Mm-hmm. So we're working nonstop on those projects to try and improve ourselves with economic development. We're working nonstop to get flights here. We're working nonstop to make the airfield safer. We're putting in transitioning the airfield to the latest air safety standards. It's the largest project in the Airport Authority's history, over $325 million, I think, right now. And so it's a whole campaign, but we really, really need and want people to support the airport, because the more you support the airport, the better it is for our entire region. As a matter of fact, I think we did the calculation. If 5% of the people who hit the I-10 and
you're saying 5 out of 100 of those that hit the I-10 to go up to Sky Harbor.
Okay. Yes, you said it, not me.
If they would reconsider and use our local airport, what kind of difference would that make, Dave Hatfield?
We would add a flight for every 5% of people.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it could be a flight to a new destination. There are so many.
So even in this heat, there's a segment of the population that says, they perceive what? That they're going to get a better deal out of Phoenix? Or
That is sort of the million-dollar question. Yeah. There is not a better deal. I mean, our airfares on average are within I'm going to lose it here. I think it was $7. Mm-hmm. It's less than $14 mm-hmm. difference. The only thing I can think of that does come up when we do surveys is people say you can get more nonstop flights out of mm-hmm. there, mm-hmm. whereas I have to make a connection mm-hmm. if I go from Tucson.
But they're perhaps not factoring in you're going to be in the car for 2 hours, then there's parking, and then if the airlines like you in the airport at least an hour, 90 minutes ahead. So there's 3 to 4 hours right there.
That's precisely my point. I would argue that anybody driving to Phoenix is still making a connection. The only difference is you're driving.
You're right. Yeah. And I've studied this, and I have seen if you put in like Tucson to say Eugene, Oregon, or any of these areas that American serves nonstop mm-hmm. out of Phoenix, you would think that, well, if you put in Phoenix, Eugene, it's going to be cheaper just from the – it actually can be cheaper Tucson to Eugene with a connection in Phoenix. I don't know why that is, but it can be.
It is not the cost that charges the fare. Airlines know that people prefer nonstop.
Sure.
So if you have to make a connection, they will give a break on the price. For instance, you can fly from Sky Harbor to London.
Right.
If you flew from Tucson and connected in Phoenix,
yes.
The fare from Tucson to London on that very same flight
yes.
will be cheaper than if you got on the plane in Phoenix and flew nonstop.
Good point, Dave Hatfield, because that's something that slips under the radar screen. People, they don't, and you've articulated it very well, you're basically, the airlines are discounting a connection.
Right.
They
right.
are discounting the connection.
For the inconvenience.
For the inconvenience.
Yes.
Wow.
And part of the thing with my London example is there's also a lot more competition. I mean, there's only one flight a day, sometimes two flights a day from Phoenix to London. From Tucson, there are half dozen, maybe a dozen connections mm-hmm. a day mm-hmm. that'll get you to London. So there's more competition, and you don't necessarily have to connect in Phoenix. You could connect in Dallas or Chicago or Houston.
Let's talk about the website before we leave, Dave Hatfield. Your website?
FlyTucson.com. Mm-hmm.
And what will people find there?
Hopefully everything you need to know. we keep it up to date. I, as you know, mm-hmm. used to be in the news business.
Sure.
So I am very interested in making sure that everything is timely on there. We have our flight arrivals, departures, the latest information. Pretty much you can do anything except we can't sell tickets. That's the only thing.
Has Southwest ironed out their kinks with the computer system? Only a quick few seconds.
I think so. they didn't yesterday. Today when I was walking out, it didn't look quite so bad.
Yeah. And that affected the whole system, right?
Oh, I walked in yesterday not realizing it was going on for a second day, and there was a line out the door, and our poor police people were trying to say, hey, would you keep a line, let people walk through?
All right, Dave Hatfield, we will talk to you as we transition from summer to autumn, and I can't wait for that. Maybe we'll have had a great rainy season as well. Dave, great to see you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Buckmaster at the midway point on this Thursday afternoon. Be right back. CBS News right now.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Have you ever imagined how your life would be without the modern conveniences you rely on every day? Everything you need depends entirely on products produced from mining. Without mining, think Stone Age. Your work commute might be a bit slower, but you could still have social media. Bathing shouldn't be a problem, but it won't be in a tub. So unless you're a caveman, you can see everything that enriches your life depends on the many miracles from mining. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
Enjoy the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley. Savor the view while sipping on locally brewed craft beer and enjoying gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, at West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and on the web at noblehops.com.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail and over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
MedCare to You is a new Tucson-based concierge telemedicine urgent care, specializing in caring for our patients in the comfort of your location. We deliver your prescriptions and even provide in-person visits with our dedicated staff. It's convenient, quick, private, and your personal information is always protected. Find out more at MedCareToYouAZ.com. Reed Park Zoo is now open for wildlife walks.
a modified guest experience, prioritizing social distancing and safety. To find out more about all the changes and the new safety precautions now in place, visit reedparkzoo.org. The community-approved 10-year master plan ensures that your zoo's future is brighter than ever before. We've missed you, and so have the animals. They're waiting to welcome you back to the Reed Park Zoo.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Green Things, not only your place for everything green and beautiful for your garden, and hopefully as you start thinking about monsoon planting. Summer rainy season planting, get some beautiful color after the very long, hot drought. 3384 East River Road, and when you're there looking for plants, stop by the air-conditioned shops at Zocalo Village, which is on the same site right there on East River Road. These are five shops, freestanding buildings, just loaded with beautiful items from really all over the world. Specialty Mexico, Latin America. There's some European items as well, and some of that furniture in there. These beautiful handcrafted carved tables and dining room sets. So check it out, ZocaloVillage.com and Green Things AZ. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Joining me in studio, one of our favorite guests, Dr. Albrecht Claassen, University Distinguished Professor and Director of Undergraduate Studies in the Department of German Studies at the University of Arizona. Professor Claassen has a broad range of research interests covering the history of medieval and early modern German and European literature and culture from about 800 AD to 1800. He's also involved in contemporary literature, writing poetry and prose. He's published hundreds of scholarly articles and book citations, translations, and textbooks, including a handbook of medieval studies. He's won so many honors, including the Grand Knight Commander of the Most Noble Order of the Three Lions, in recognition for outstanding service to German studies. Just a week or so ago, he was named one of five new members of the Arizona Humanities Board of Directors here in the state of Arizona. Dr. Claassen, always a pleasure.
Thank you so much. I'm very happy to be here. So thank you.
People don't understand, many of them, when they hear the word humanities. What is this Arizona Humanities Board, and what do you hope to bring to the table, Professor?
The Arizona Humanities is an organization. It's state-funded and federally funded. The organization tries to bring the humanities to people, to all kinds of social groups, to bring the arts, music, literature, but also history, archaeology, and other related fields to the people. So libraries, museums, schools, social and civic groups, to sort of enrich their world and to bring really the human dimension back to the center of our existence.
The humanities, when did the humanities become a very much a part of kind of the modern university system? Is the generally when we talk about humanities, was it a 19th century concept, or what do you, how do you characterize it?
The universities until maybe 1800 or so were much more oriented toward classical rhetoric and philology and philosophy. Only by the early 19th century did sort of the national component arise. That's when then at the universities all over the world, slowly national literatures were studied. And that kind of formed then or fermented into humanities departments as we know them today. Department of English, Department of German Studies, Department of Slavic and Russian, and so forth.
Did that emerge after the First World War, this interest in foreign languages on university campuses, or was it something at the turn of the century into the 20th century?
I would say it started already early 19th century.
Early 19th century
with a strong emphasis on studying ancient and medieval texts, let's say, in English.
With Latin being at the forefront.
Well, Latin kind of disappeared and slowly went the way where it is today, a more scholarly language studied, whereas the national languages, the vernaculars, became much more important. So the rise of national literatures, that was the 19th century, to some extent the 20th century. Today, we are looking much more at global aspects, so global humanities, global literature.
How much of the English language has German roots, German language roots? A large percentage, a small percentage? Where does the English, where does German fit into the into modern day English?
That's kind of funny. I'm giving regularly lectures across the state as part of the Speakers Bureau, and I was just asked to submit a number of new topics for the next round, 2 years or so. And one of the topics is the English language. What is language and what is the English language? Now, in England, first you had Celtic languages. Then in the 5th and 6th centuries, Germanics came over, the Anglo-Saxons. And they brought a huge amount of German languages, phrases, structures to the English language. So a lot of words in English today are really Germanic and they're very, very similar. Body parts, animals. Let's say when you say you're lucky, then you just add the G and you have Glück, which means exactly the same thing. So I would say maybe today about 30% of English is really Germanic.
This wasn't to be my primary topic today, but with you, I always get into different areas. And I was just thinking about—I mean, we could spend the rest of the rest of our time together talking about language, but I do want to talk about the medieval area where you are so well versed and really an international scholar in things medieval. The whole idea that people talk about the generic. It's really a generic fascination that people have with medieval images. Where does that interest seem to come from?
Well, one of the major reasons was the Napoleonic Wars. That means until 1815, with the destruction of many traditional institutions and countries, and hence the search for a new form of identity, and which then both, let's say, Lord Byron or German philologists discovered in the Middle Ages. At the same time, it was the discovery of the beautiful cathedrals. I mean, anyone who travels through medieval Europe is absolutely stunned by the beauty of stained glass windows, sculptures, but also manuscripts and paintings. And so by the early 19th century, this really kicked off. And you have a huge interest ever since. I think this is, until today, very much of great interest with tournaments and the Society for Creative Anachronism. But our students also express great interest. They find it fascinating what is expressed in those medieval texts, because they many times they address universal values, concepts, and ideas.
The idea that the medieval period were somehow dark ages and that really nothing seemed to, that nothing was accomplished. It was really kind of a horrible time, people dying of the of the Black Plague. And many times I think the concept is that after the classic Roman period, that the earth descended into this period where it was just a kind of area that we just kind of write off as not being worthy of our attention. But when you look at what was accomplished during the medieval period, take the Islamic world, which really for the Islamic period, the medieval or the Middle Ages were really a renaissance period.
Fascinating, and thank you for bringing that up. This is the common notion, and I'm very much concerned myself, my research and my teaching, to destroy that myth. Of course, with the fall of the Roman, Western Roman Empire, things fell apart to some extent, but at the same time, you had the church, the Catholic Church, which continued without any change, maintaining writing, the arts, music, medicine, architecture, in a different way. But, you know, the general attitude is simply the past is worse than the present. I think that's where it really comes from. Mm. So let's say by analogy, we tend to think that our grandparents, for example, led a much more unhappy life. They didn't have internet, they didn't have their smartphones, and they didn't have the good hospitals. I bet you this is all very wrong. I think they were very happy. They had the same, they had suffering, and they had misery and sadness and sorrow, but they also had their heydays, and they were just living a good life.
But they are. But the misconception would be that they've been deprived of all the devices that we are now so attached to. Our grandparents didn't have a device to look at, or they didn't have. Didn't go Googling on spending hours on the computer. So they must have been really. That must have been a horrible life.
That's what we think.
That's what
we're so fast paced.
Yes,
and we forget that behind the fast pace, there is the human being, and that human being needs, let's say, social contact, needs expression, needs the beauty, needs the arts. And I mean, I don't know how long has it been that you wrote a letter by hand, but if you, I mean, I still do it.
And I like to do
it. It's beautiful.
I have a broken right arm right now, and I'm not able to do it, but I'm looking forward to within weeks being able to write again and send people letters. I still send, I'm old school. When I go on vacation, this vacation where I had the accident up in Alaska was the first time in probably 40 years that I didn't send a postcard.
Yeah,
I have a postcard list with dozens of people that I regularly keep up to date on our travels. But again, I'm old school. I like to write.
That is the beauty. And this writing stays. And if you have an old letter, let's say when you got married or before you got married,
yes,
and you still have a love letter your wife wrote to you,
yes,
isn't that a most precious thing?
Yes.
Just imagine it would have been an email or a Twitter account. I love you. 140 characters.
Yeah, 40 years from now, people will be put, well, I've got an old email where I wrote you a love letter. Yeah, just not the same. We'll pause right here with Dr. Albrecht Clausen from the University of Arizona as we're talking about a wide variety of topics. But right now, I want to talk about Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. If you're looking to get away, and who isn't when temperatures go over 110 degrees, but there is a place not far from here that is quite cool compared to Tucson. It's about a three-hour drive from Tucson. It's Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. The elevation is 5 to 7,000 feet, and right now at the midday, it's 89 degrees. Wouldn't you like that right now? And even for their hottest days here in their five-day forecast, upper 90s. So we'll certainly, if you go over there, you're going to enjoy. And the night's really cooling off. Look at that, down to 60 degrees. Not a bad place to be right now. Visit southwestnewmexico.org for more information about your visit to Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. It's the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Our live line is generously supported by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We'll be right back. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. To prepare for ongoing project delivery, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for a new draft plan. The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com.
Hello, I'm Jeanette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year. And if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We continue now with our conversation with Dr. Albrecht Clausen, University Distinguished Professor, Director of Undergraduate Studies in the Department of German Studies at the University of Arizona. He was recently added another honor to his long resume. He's now one of five new members of the Arizona Humanities Board of Directors. Our conversation before the break, we've been talking about misconceptions about the Middle Ages. Dr. Clausen, when the Roman Empire ended, did slavery start to dwindle? Because slavery was very much a part of the Roman Empire. How did slavery and the question of race fit into the Middle Ages, into medieval times?
Yeah, to some extent, the huge Roman latifundia, so the huge estates, kind of fell apart. So they needed less
like plantations.
Slaves. Exactly. Yes. But at the same time, in the Islamic world, slavery continued unabated. And when then the economic change required more slaves by, let's say, the 11th and 12th centuries, then the slave trade picked up again, and many slaves came from Africa, but also from the Middle East and from the Slavic worlds. And by the 13th and 14th century, it really was a boom, almost, as sad as it really is. But slavery was alive and well, particularly in the late Middle Ages, and then continued actually throughout the following centuries. It's not something that simply disappeared. We just don't talk much about it. That's the new change we do in historical cultural studies.
The Hollywood portrayal of the Middle Ages is kind of the white person that is, you know, you don't think much about race. You think about Robin Hood and all of that. But it was a very diverse time, wasn't it?
One of the oddest things is that one of the earliest Christian saints, a martyr, venerated in the entire Catholic Church, was a black man, St. Morris. St. Morris, he was an African. He was a slave serving in the Roman army. He was a Christian and was martyred, that means killed, because he did not want to abandon his Christian faith. So you have lots and lots of apothecaries today, for example, in Germany, still called St. Morris or Mohren Apotheke, although people do not understand that. And they say, oh, this is all slavery. No, this is a martyr. This was an early Christian saint. Mm. So if you think about this, the three magi, one of them was a black man.
Yes.
So a black man coming and announcing the Christ of the birth of Christ.
This is the first I have heard of Saint Maurice. Is that what we're talking about?
Saint Maurice, exactly.
And celebrated in
many different places as a saint, a savior for health and for travel. Mm-hmm. People pray to him and so forth. You have a lot of pictures of St. Maurice.
You think about the slave trade and how active the Dutch, the Portuguese, the English, and the Americans were involved in. You don't hear much about Germany. What about slavery in Germany?
You had, of course, slaves, maybe not as many in the areas north of the Alps. There were a little bit different economic structures. But we have a very interesting, famous case of a slave in 18th century Germany, Amos, who came from Senegal, and he was later allowed to study at the University of Halle. He became a professor of philosophy, the first black professor of philosophy in Germany, and he was later released and allowed to return home.
Hmm. And what year would that have been?
About 1760.
I have never heard of that.
So you have a subway station, for example, in Berlin, which was just recently changed from Mooren, the Black Moor Street, to Amos Station in honor of this famous man. Mm-hmm. So the situation of slaves is very diverse.
You'll be teaching this summer at Middlebury College. You'll be teaching German literature. But yourself, you've been writing throughout the whole pandemic. What lessons or what have you learned personally, Professor, out of this pandemic? Are there a few things that come to mind?
I have learned and realized one major thing. My mind throughout the entire period was sound and healthy. Why? Because I was dedicated to research, dedicated to my students, dedicated to my university, the college, and the colleagues.
Are you
and
saying every day you tried to keep the mind very active?
Every day, yes. 7 days a week, from early in the morning till late in the evening. I have been more productive than maybe ever before.
Wow.
Because I have dedicated myself to so many different things, also to my students. Actually, I'm also an advisor, faculty advisor.
Yes.
Now we are in a paradigm shift, and advising goes so much more easily because students can connect with me via Zoom, and they can be anywhere, and it's much more direct.
Do you think that's one of the secrets to a very active mind is to try to keep busy as you age and as busy as possible with learning new things?
That's what Dr. Andrew Weil also
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
So I don't see, if I may say so, signs of aging in myself because I still practice lots of different languages. I travel, I write poetry, I do photography, a lot of photography. So this has been a very nice and interesting period. Sad to say, you know, lots of people have died. They're horrible. But mentally, I think we are going through a paradigm shift.
Yes.
And I find it extremely interesting where we find ourselves technologically, of course, but also conceptually, that we really need to keep our mind fresh. And my studies of the Middle Ages is one of the most fascinating topics that has also allowed me to connect with colleagues in India, in Egypt, in Brazil, and many other places all over the world.
Well, I love your enthusiasm. May I ask how old you are?
I am 65.
Well, you look terrific, and your mind very active, and keeping so active mentally is important for all of us. Professor, thank you very much.
You are welcome. Thank you so much.
That will wrap it up for the Buckmaster Show. Tomorrow we have Congressman Raul Grijalva will be here as our Friday Focus interview. My name is Bill Buckmaster on behalf of Professor Clausen and Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing the show. We wish you well. Have a great afternoon, everybody.